think Kirky's happy Jano's back too. But yeah, what Kirky has done, I understand the offense was struggling, so to speak. But like, to play as many games as he did to start, it's really tough for a catcher. Catchers don't usually plan for that in spring training. So I know he's been wearing it. I know he will never say what he feels like. That's just Kirky. But I'm sure he's tired. So yeah.
Yeah, that is Chris Bassitt after last night's win over the New York Yankees, navigating his way, Kevin Barker, through the Yankees lineup in a 3-1 win. His catcher, Alejandro Kirk, celebrated the imminent loss of playing time by getting his first extra base hit of the year, 50 at-bats, and throwing out a runner. Could have had a couple of runners thrown out. But Danny Jansen's back. We know that. We are led to believe, I don't think John Schneider's lying about this, that Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson will be activated today.
Ooh.
We await to see the corresponding roster moves. But a lot to deal with last night's game, Kevin. But let's start first and foremost talking about Chris Bassitt and, indeed, I guess in some ways, Alejandro Kirk, who works pretty well with Chris Bassitt. But in general, your thoughts of Chris Bassitt's performance last night?
Yeah, it's methodical. I mean, I think that's the one word is, you know, when you see him on the mound, you're if you're an opposing hitter, you're trying to game plan against him. How do you do it? Like, you know, sometimes I think guys try and have their at-bat on the on-deck circle, especially if the guy in front of you is similar, right? You know, maybe you're a left-handed power hitter. Maybe the guy in front of you is sort of the same kind of guy. That pitcher would throw you the same way as he'd throw the guy that's standing at the plate. That never happens. Like you know, I think they know he has a sinker. That's it. Like, you know, and all
that's
of a,
right.
All of a sudden now he can elevate it. It runs instead of sinks. He can throw the cutter. The cutter's a late-moving elevated cutter, which is very hard to lay off of. He throws that almost all the time in the perfect situation. Like, he doesn't abuse it. He doesn't show it to you a ton so you can, you know, see it. And that way, when he does throw it in a big spot, you have a better chance of hitting it. It's just when he does the things he does with the sinker, he had the extra gear last night. I mean, the velocity on the – I told you this. You know, 89 to 91 ain't it. When it's 91, 94, and occasionally he'll reach that 95, 96 mark, he ain't going to pitch at that. But occasionally he'll get a little frisky with a four-seamer or run that thing up and away to a lefty or up and into a righty in a big spot. He can do that now. Like, it just seems like he's in the flow of everything. You know, I think that pitch device thing in the first couple innings, the Velcro on it broke.
I wanted to talk about that because we saw Chris Bassitt in the first two innings not use the PitchCom device, not use the transmitter.
Yeah.
And we thought, okay, well, that's interesting. You know, obviously they scripted the first time through and didn't feel like he needed it. And Buck and Danny were talking about it. And Buck was saying, you know, I don't know, who knows with pitchers, but there's got to be a reason for it. And then we find out the reason for it is the Velcro wasn't working, which is why.
Yeah.
Or they didn't. Wasn't working, however you describe it, which is why he was wearing it again in the third inning.
Yeah.
And it is kind of fun. I mean, the second inning was his most laborious inning, but that tells you just, we're so convinced that Chris Bassitt is playing three-dimensional chess.
Yeah.
That everything he does is something that he...
It's on purpose.
It is. He lies in bed at night. How can I screw with them and the pitch clock? And no, it was just simply a matter of Velcro. But
yeah, my wife yelled at me. She said I need to be on Twitter just because she tweeted that the strap on the Velcro had broken and they were trying to fix that.
Twitter, you know,
they had seven khakis back there trying to fix the Velcro. So, you know, you get the Velcro fixed, you come out. Look, all joking aside.
You know, no, but you know what the problem was, too? I mean, they only, as far as I can tell, they only have one assistant Velcro coach. So clearly they need to add another Velcro.
A couple
Velcro,
more of those to make sure that, you know, one for every inning kind
sure,
of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. You one know, for the lefties, well, one for the righties.
Absolutely, right. You know, it's sort of when you're Chris Bassitt, you're thinking about, well, I got six at-bats against lefties. I think he was 2 for 12. You know, he took care of that. Meat of the order, right? 2, 3, 4. That's Judge, Soto, and Rizzo. They were 0 for 8 with a walk, I think. So he sort of maneuvered his way around the things he was supposed to maneuver his way around, You know, he's pounding the zone. He's elevating it like it's late moving. You know, he's changing speeds. When he's got the slow breaking ball, he can throw the slider. Like, you know, it's he's starting to toy with you when he's got command and good feel of the two fastballs. And then he starts throwing the four-seamer a little bit harder. Look, I just don't know. And Buck said this last night on the telecast. I just don't know what you look for. Like, you know, everybody tries to go up there, I think, nowadays and have the perfect plan and you know, exactly what every guy's going to throw in every single count, right? If he gets ahead, he falls behind. Guy standing at first, you know, somebody standing at third, he's going to throw this, that, and this guy. How do you do that against Chris? I guess you don't. You know, it's more you're hunting windows. But, boy, if you hunt in a window and you get it, you better not miss it, because if you do – you know, just by him reading a swing of, you know, you take a big daddy hack on something and it looks like you know what's coming, you ain't never getting that again. And I think that's sort of the where he's at his best, too, is, you know, he's really good at reading demeanor of the hitter, you know, bat path and just how good the swings are. He doesn't need the catcher telling him that. I think that's pretty cool. To have 18 seconds to figure all that out, get on the same page with eight different pitches, and be able to locate that stuff with movement, man, it is. I told you this last night after the game. He might be one of the only pitchers, and I hate pitchers. I got to be honest with you. I mean, they cost me a lot of big league time, so I am not a big fan. But I would buy a ticket to watch him pitch. That's how impressive that is. When he's rocking and rolling, got the good velocity, he can make a really good lineup just scratching their head, asking everybody else how you go up there and have your at bat. And it's pretty cool to watch. I think that for a 35-year-old to be able to do that, tip your hat, man. It's something impressive.
The second game of the series goes tonight at the Rogers Center. It'll be Carlos Rodon against Yusei Kikuchi. Chris LaRue, our Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, will join us in studio. Ricky Tiedemann will be along at 2:30. He is, of course, the Jays' top pitching top prospect. Mm-hmm. I should say he's at AAA Buffalo, and he's
healthy.
So the Jays are now 9-8 after the win last night. It was not. Well, I mean, we're going to get into this argument. We're going to have the same argument we had in Blue Jays talk, and I don't want to do it because we argued in circles last night about Luis Hill and
it's not an argument
and the Jays.
I face guys
the Jays'
like that.
Inability to
it's hard to hit
to cash in. Yeah, then we might as well just not play the games.
Why they won guys? Because like their pitching's really good and they play good defense.
They did play good defense.
Yeah.
Base running was
spotty,
say the least. Bo getting picked off. Dalton Varsho, we talked about that play. You made a very good point. I'm talking about the play in the second inning. I think it was Springer hit the grounder. Cabrera at third base catches the ball, goes to first. Varsho doesn't go home. I'm sitting there saying, "Why aren't you running?"
Me
too. They're conceding the run, but you also made an observation that only a player who has stood on third base in that situation.
Yeah.
And I want you to, because I know people may not have heard Blue Jays talk last night, but if you think back to that play, because mm-hmm. we're all doing the same thing you are at home. We're saying, why didn't you run? They're conceding the run. But you made a point about the actual ball, like the hit and the way it traveled.
Well, it had a little hump back in it, right? It looked like a mini line drive, and those are very hard to, you know, to read sometimes right off the bat. You know, how far is that going to carry? You know, did the third baseman move over late without you seeing? Dalton Varsho is very good at field awareness. Like, he looks at everything, doesn't need the coach to walk over and say, you know, look at the outfields, look where the third baseman's standing. You know, the infielders are deep. You can go on a ground ball. Like, he doesn't need anybody to tell him that. But you also have to understand where you're at in the order, right? Mm-hmm. You're at the top of the order. You know, you have to know how many outs there is. You have to know, you know, what you're going to do on a line drive. Do I freeze? You know, how far over closer to the third baseline is the third baseman? So if that ball's hit to his left, makes him move a couple of steps, you know, am I okay no matter how hard it's hit to go? There's a lot of things go into that. And as soon as you see the little line drive and don't know how far that's going to carry, your first thought is to freeze. Dalton Varsho is a very good base runner, right? And when you freeze and it's hit to an infielder, your first step after that is to go back. And then once you make that sort of mental move going back, it's too late then. Then you just got to freeze. Then there's a lot of conversation going on with your third base coach on, you know, why you didn't score, and tack on runs are very important. But again, there's a lot of things go into that. I'm not making excuses for him.
No.
Because I'm sure next time it won't happen that way. The read will be a little bit better. It'll be some emphasis on, you know, you got to understand for sure 1,000% of where that infielder is standing, where they're at. They're conceding the run, all those kind of things. Don't worry about who's hitting behind, the guy that's hitting. Like, all those things that will go into being a really good base runner. So I can understand
both sides.
I can understand why fans were throwing their hands in the air, and I can also understand why Dalton Varsho froze and didn't score. But I'll bet 10 times out of the next 10 times he will be scoring, because he is a very good base runner.
Yeah, it was. It was one of those plays.
It's not an easy read.
No,
basically what I'm trying to say.
And you could tell by looking at him, that was going through his mind. Like in hindsight, yeah, you wish you'd taken off. But
you could read his lips when he said to the third base coach, "Should I have scored?"
Yeah,
there was some doubt there, and you never want a good base runner to have doubt. When in doubt, freeze, go back, right? Yeah. And because it's not two outs. Like, you're not going on contact there, and you're still top of the order. Like, you're still giving the next guy a chance to drive you in.
Great point.
You know, because we would have been yelling and screaming if he's doubled off, right?
Oh my God.
So there you go. Just because of where they're at in the order, and Bo's gotten picked off already. Like, there was some things that could have happened and that would have made it look worse. But I will bet next time he will score, because, you know, you live and learn. You correct yourself, and you'd be better next time.
I want to go back to Luis Cil. And
you yelled at me.
Seven walks. But I want you to.
I had a caller call in to say you were right and I was wrong.
Yeah. Wow.
They shouldn't be going 1-for-10 off a guy that throws a bazillion and can't throw a strike.
Here's the thing. Okay. I just explained it. Okay.
I mean, look, I think a lot of it is you have a lineup who is fifth worst in baseball in hard hit percentage and 26th in baseball in hitting a home run with only 14. Those two answers right there, just by facing a guy who's thrown 9 innings coming in and only allowed 3 hits and is like the fifth hardest thrower in baseball as a starter, that's not even a three-quarter arm angle. That's more of a sidearm angle that comes out. When it comes out, it's spinning sideways. Now, everybody's rolling their eyes because they expect this lineup to always get hits off everybody when I don't. Like, I've come to the realization that against dudes like this, if you're winning the game, that's good enough right now.
That's where I wanted to go with this, because I was second-guessing myself, because I'm sitting there thinking we spend all day, and of course, this is often the case, I realized this when I was driving home after doing
that. I was right and you were wrong?
No, I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go that far.
Charlie, was it Charlie?
Even if you were right, I would never admit it. But I was realizing this after spending all day talking about, okay, this is the way this offense is going to be. Home runs are gone, all that stuff. It's going to be grinded out, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. They did just that, and then I was sitting there saying, yeah, but you should have been able to come through with a big hit. And, I guess you can't have it both ways, right? This is what it is. And you're right, at the end of the day, they won.
You got to remember, too, the hottest hitter on the planet, Justin Turner, he was made look silly by a guy that is all over the place.
Yeah.
That throws a bazillion with a changeup. I think his first 45 pitches threw one slider. So it was fastball, changeup. He's throwing those two pitches probably for a couple of reasons. The one main reason is he don't have to throw a third pitch because the lineup consistently is just not giving you good enough at-bats that he's got to, you know, maneuver and go to his third pitch. And I just think fastball command wasn't great. And he was trying to fight through it and give him – basically as much as he could give the Yankees, as long as he could give it to them. And I'm just saying this, when it's sidearm, that's not even three-quarter. That's three-quarter, if anybody can see me on TV. It's more sidearm over here. So if you're a right-handed hitter, say you're the baseball, you can see it on TV, and that's the right-handed hitter, it's coming from behind you. And I'm not making excuses for the Blue Jays lineup.
I mean, you stood at the plate. Why we have
they're yards. Just it's coming this way. It's running and it's 97, 98 miles an hour. And then he throws a changeup, which is a hard changeup.
Yeah.
But he's locating that. So how do you attack this if you're a hitter? Do you be aggressive? Do you take pitches? Because once you start taking pitches and he locates one by accident, now you're behind and now you have to cheat because you're having trouble seeing it because of where he's releasing it from and it's moving so much and it's thrown so hard. I just say sometimes you can't argue about it.
You just take
be fortunate that you won 3-1 because your pitchers are really, really good.
I wanted to ask you this as well. Something else you did touch on Blue Jays Talk, and we will be doing Blue Jays Talk after tonight's game. We'll also be doing it after tomorrow's game from the Rogers Center. It is TV only. I'm sorry, radio only tomorrow post-game, so we'll be taking calls. We'll throw out the numbers, et cetera, et cetera. You made a point last night as well, because I asked you about Vladdy's at-bat. Again, it was Marinaccio, where he swings at the changeup that's, like, miles out. And I'm going, oh. And you made the point, okay, look at what he was facing in the game up to that point. Look at the at-bats he had in the game up to that
cheating
point.
To get to velocity.
And your point was that was set up perfectly for Vladdy to do what he did. Like that was, and again, this is someone who's played the game. You may have had at-bats like that. Can you explain that to me, the carryover effect of poor at-bats?
Yeah.
Against a previous pitcher.
It's like everybody, a lot of people golf, right? Even if you're bad at it, you golf. Okay, a lot of people golf because it's sort of get away from your family and, you know, do you time. I think when you go to the driving range and you're destroying baseballs and you go take your first swing and it's atrocious and you're yelling four and you got to chase your baseball, it's the same thing as a hitter. If you're going off the field and your mechanics are there, your timing's there, your back spinning balls to right center, you're square with your shoulders, you got good extension, you go in your first at bat, it's a rollover to third, and you're thinking to yourself, because it's 90% mental, you're thinking to yourself, here we go again. And then you start chasing hits. And that's sort of exactly where Vladdy's at. Now, Vladdy has a real issue hitting the heater. He's been having that for the last 2 years. That's why, for me, I have no idea why this organization has not sat him down and go, your mechanics is not good. How do we get you back to, in 2021, what did he have? He hit 366 with 26 homers off the fastball. He's hit 292 and 272 in the last 2 years with 18 homers and 12 homers. It's considerably going backwards. For me, it's mechanical. Why this organization has not sat him down and be like, okay, there's a big enough sample size here that we try to correct this. At least give yourself a chance to stay in the big part of the field and hit something hard. And it starts with the fastball. And that's what I said, right? Great hitters don't have to cheat to hit the heater. Vladdy right now is cheating to hit the heater. And that's what I said. There's carryover to these at-bats, and that's why we've had callers yelling and screaming about him missing changeups and off-speed pitches by feet. That's the reason why. I mean, just barrel percentage. If you look from 2021, which was over 15%, to 2022 and 2023, it's in the low 11 percentile. It's considerably going backwards. That will tell you mechanically. And on top of that, mentally, something's not right. And until he fixes those things to be a better fastball hitter, you will continue as a Jays fan to throw things at your TV screen because he's missing off-speed pitches by feet. I can't really say it any other way than that. So this is why I had the conversation on Friday about we talk about Vladdy as a good hitter, not a great hitter. Because great hitters don't hit fastballs like that.
Yeah, it's,
So I don't think, I don't think you should be surprised. Like, you shouldn't be yelling and screaming about him missing a changeup after taking fastballs. And, you know, right now he's one side of the field. Just to give you an example, 2021, he hit 17 home runs up the middle the other way.
Mm-hmm.
He's a right-handed hitter. You take the – if you're looking at second base, you take it, split it in half. Everything to his right side, he hit 17 home runs. He's hit a combined 12 the last two seasons.
Wow.
That's 7 in 2022. That's 5 last year. Basically, that side of the field with power has been eliminated. Why is that? I know barrel percentages went down the last 2 years. Is that mental? Is that mechanical? Is that the field you were playing in 2021? I mean, he hit 31 of the 48 at home. That's Dunedin and Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of homers. 17 of wherever those were hit were up the middle the other way. Since then, that side of the field has been eliminated and barrel percentage has went way down. This is not rocket science. Like, until you consistently buy into a lot of my stuff is moving around and consistently I can't get it down on time. We've heard Turner talk about this all the time. It's hitting is nothing but timing. Why do you think hitters or pitchers will get the sign really quick and make Vladdy stand there? And Vladdy don't really know when to start or stop, or you can actually visibly see it. I mean, you don't have to be a hitting coach to watch it while they're doing it. They see the same thing I see. When he's in a hurry and the stride gets longer, the barrel's playing catch up. And you know what? When that happens, the barrel percentage goes down. That means, because that sweet spot on a wooden bat is about yay big. It ain't this big. It's not aluminum. It's about this big. Your room for error is inches. That means everything from the ground up almost has to be perfect for you to consistently have the barrel percentage at 15%. Until that gets better. I mean, every great hitter, you look, all you got to do is see if they're a great hitter is what they do against fastballs. And that's why when you talk and we have, you know, people call in and are frustrated about how much he misses the ball, it's not frustrating to me because I understand it.
You're getting tired of it.
Absolutely. Like, it's he is oozing talent. It's just, it's talent off the charts. But for us to come on this and everybody that ever talks about Vladdy and say they have the same conversation, until realistically the Blue Jays and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. fix the fastball thing, he's a good hitter, not a great hitter. Was I nice enough and answered that enough?
Yeah,
that
it's,
you know?
You know, and I mean, part of the reason people keep
they're hoping
talking about Vladdy.
Because they understand he does have talent.
And you know what? People want Vladdy to do well.
I'm in that. He's a great dude. I mean, I root for him. But I just don't understand. It's 2 years of a big sample size. Like, it's a lot of at-bats.
And they've had, and I'm going to say this too. You know, we talk about the 38 hitting coaches he's had. But they've also had Eddie around him. They've had Victor Martinez. Eddie's been around a fair amount.
I like Eddie.
I do too, but what I'm saying is they've had Eddie around him. They've had Victor Martinez around him. You know, we know that last year he brought his uncle Wilton in, and Wilton is a guy who actually, if you know the family history, Wilton spent as much, if not more, time with Vladdy when he was developing as a player because Vladdy Sr. was playing in the majors. He reached out to David Ortiz. We had David Ortiz tell us at the All-Star break. So that is another thing that kind of when I look at the people who have had access to him. So it's not just whatever we may think of the hitting coaches. They've had legit major league players, starting with the dude who's now the offensive coordinator. These are legit guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who have spoken to Vladdy.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't transferred onto the field. That really concerns me.
Yeah.
Because I've got to think that all those people, they're smart enough. I'm sure people have different approaches, but I'm sure they can see the same thing you can see.
Yeah.
That does concern me a bit.
Yeah, I think it is what it is. Like, I just don't know. I don't know how you could watch the Blue Jays play. Take him serious as a hitter until he actually figures out how to consistently hammer fastballs. And I'm talking about backspinning them for homers.
And of course, the big fear with Vladdy is that he figures this out 2 years down the road when he's playing for the Giants or the Padres.
Again, the average has went down enough, and the power numbers against the fastball have went down enough that will tell me that my timing or my mechanics to get to my timing is off. It ain't. He's getting about the same amount of fastballs as he's gotten the year that he was good to now. Like, it's, I mean, it's a little different, but it ain't a lot different.
It's not a huge.
It's not enough different that you got to go, okay, now I got to go up and sit curveball all the time. No, you're getting enough fastballs that you could go up there looking for it till you get to two strikes. If I'm on time to hit that thing consistently, it's just, yeah, like it's, because he's got tons of talent. It's just, it's sort of like Groundhog Day. And you can, now you're starting to see him after he swings at things, show his displeasure about what the process is. Like, I think he's heard enough about the process. Mm-hmm. And it's gone through enough of the process. That's what I said. Now, the change for me would be easy. Widen out a little bit, leg kick, and try and get it down and be balanced. Because you have all the everything. You have torque. You have bat speed. You're young. Like, you can hit, you should be able to hit fastballs. It's just, from the ground up, it's just not working in unison to allow you, timing-wise, to be able to catch that stuff out front. You got to catch velocity out front. You got to beat it to the spot. How many times you see Vladdy beat it to the spot? Rarely, because why? You see the lean back roll over to the third and short, and then you see him half running the first, or he's throwing his helmet now, which I'm okay with that. I mean, he's a human being. He wants to help too. I just, man, it's a big, it's long enough. And we answer a lot of these questions after the game too. And, you know, again, I think it gets back to that. How do you make up if Vladdy continues to stay this way? How does the fifth worst in hard hit percentage and 26th in home runs get better? Can you explain that to me?
Again, given this sample size, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's
asking a 39-year-old to do a lot, and a 35-year-old and your leadoff hitter. And, you know, Bose, you could tell, is pressing, trying to pick up the slack for other guys around him. Like, you could visit, he don't have to tell you. It's like, you can see he's a human.
It's odd to see Bo press, not press. It's odd to see Bo show the reaction he is showing this early in the season.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen it in the past. You know, everybody, right? August, dog days, September.
They're trying. Like, it's not lack of effort. It's not like they're not going in cages and hitting a bazillion baseballs. Like, it's – and to not have it translate, it's frustrating. I've been there. Not like, I was never as good as these guys. But I've been there where you, boy, you just, man, you're feeling so confident. And that's why Dan Schulman said that 1-for-15 mm-hmm. for Vladdy, his first bat, you know, his first at bat.
Yep.
That's so important. So today, if you're a Jays fan and you're wanting to win, pray for Vladdy to hit a line drive off the left center field wall for a double and get him all fired up. And he'd have a good day for that.
Ricky Tiedemann is a Blue Jays top pitching prospect. He is a Blue Jays top prospect. He's a Triple-A Buffalo. Again, knock on wood. So far, he's been healthy. Mostly mm-hmm. healthy this year. Ricky Tiedemann will join us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
.707 is the time of the first pitch tonight. Carlos Rodon on the mound for the Yankees. Yusei Kikuchi for the Blue Jays. The Jays coming off a 3-1 win over the Yankees last night. A win tonight, they win the series. And
Last three starts against the Yankees. ERA of a little over one. They're hitting .214. You have any idea why he's good against the Yankees?
I've talked about this. He's good at Yankee Stadium, too. I don't know. Do you have any idea why?
I ask around, because I really don't.
Because he's really good against the Yankees.
Because they got some really good right-handed hitters that you think would be feasting off some left-handed pitching. And I ask around. They have no idea either.
Well, that's good.
They said they just hope it continues to happen.
Well, listen, you know what? Yeah. If your team doesn't know why you're good against a certain team, then it stands to reason the other team doesn't know why.
Absolutely.
They're not good against you. So that's...
Yeah.
That's all good.
Yeah.
We're very pleased at this time to be joined by Ricky Tiedemann. He's the Blue Jays' top pitching prospect, the Blue Jays' top prospect. He's a Triple-A Buffalo. Ricky, thanks for joining us on Blair and Barker. I know you got a pitcher's meeting in half an hour, so I'll get right to it. What to you would be a good 2024 for Ricky Tiedemann?
I think a good one, I think goal-wise, is just being able to go the five-day rotation and be able to stay out there consistently and give my innings and obviously be ready for the show when I do get the call. But, yeah, I think it's just consistency is something I'd be super happy with in this 2024 season. Result-wise, number-wise and everything, I think just being able to be out there every 5 days and give at least five innings, and I think that's the main goal towards the end of the season, and hopefully that could be with the big league club if they need it. But, yeah, that's the main goal.
Ricky, where are you at mechanically? Is there something you're working on? Is there, you know, to consistently keep your velocity? Like, is there one thing that, you know, when you're doing side sessions, you go in the game, you're really thinking about, you know, if I do this, everything will go and be as hard as I want it to be?
Yeah, I think for me, it's more about being fluid down the mound, especially with my tunneling. I think when I'm falling down the mound the right way, everything seems to stay tunneled towards the middle of the plate. When I kind of fly open, that's when things start to get a little wild. And it tends to happen when I try to turn up on a fastball a little bit and try to get it by guys. And if I can get down the mound the same way every single time, it'll kind of fall together easier, especially as the game goes on. But yeah, I think mechanically for me, it's just my fluidity down the slope and keeping everything tunneled towards the middle of the zone.
Whenever you're with Pete Walker in spring training, is that the conversation? Is it mechanical? Is it, you know, just control the zone? Is it attack the zone? Like, I think he's very good at being simple like that, you know, just right. Make it a simple approach. Is that sort of the conversation? Sort of take us inside back and forth between a big league pitching coach and yourself.
Right. I think, yeah, he definitely keeps it simple. And I think most of the game is simple as a pitcher. I think if you're a pitcher that throws relatively harder, I think the game gets even more simple as when it comes to your goals. I think it's just being in the zone as much as possible and letting your stuff work. And the most success I have is when I'm in the zone. And I think that's just the simple goal for me is just staying there and kind of working from that. And that's something me and P always kind of preach to each other and just kind of attack the zone and be aggressive.
Yeah, sorry I'm hogging you here, and I'll let Jeff jump in here, but you made me think of something. You mentioned velocity. If I've never seen you pitch and I come and watch you for the first time and I see you throw a fastball, is there a velocity that would tell me that you're going to have a really good day?
I wouldn't necessarily say that there's a specific velocity. I think being able to control velocity in certain situations, being able to stay out there as long as possible and be consistent week in and week out, you have to be able to manipulate when you're throwing the ball as hard as you can and kind of painting corners. And for me, I think once you see that my ball is kind of mid-90s and up at the top of the zone consistently, that's when you know it's going to be probably a pretty good day for me. Other than that, I wouldn't say there's specific velo that you would watch for me to have a good day, you know?
Wow.
Ricky, I'm wondering, going to the Arizona Fall League this year and then, you know, building on last year by going to the Arizona Fall League, then going to spring training, when you talk to guys who spent time in the Arizona Fall League, it's almost, I think, I've seen a couple of games down there, but I don't think people realize necessarily how important the Arizona Fall League can be, especially in a pitcher's development. Like, did you come away from there just feeling completely different about yourself because you were, you know, you're against the elite of the elite, right?
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think getting there and being able to play with different players and kind of getting a different scenario where you're playing at, it kind of loosened you up a little bit. And as a pitcher, you want to just go out there and play your game, not really think too much. And I think that did that for me. And especially when it comes to pitcher development, you want to just be able to hone in on your mechanics and your pitches in an environment that kind of lets you do that. I think the AFL was big on that. It's just going out there competing with guys you are really just meeting for the first time and then kind of focusing on what you can do for the team in that moment. So I think the AFL really helps with that.
I'm wondering when you're there with other prospects, how much are you guys, because you could be facing the guy that's your teammate, could be the guy that you have to face, you know, later on this year. How much sort of talk is there about, you know, hey, I saw you doing this, you know, maybe you want to try this, or, you know, you were tipping this and I saw this. stuff like that. Are guys, younger guys, still willing to exchange information and in that situation?
Yeah, I think when the situation calls for it, they are. But in the AFL, it was more, everybody was kind of just really trying to get to know each other. It's really only a month that we get to play with each other. So it wasn't, everybody's kind of watching each other and how they go about their business and play. But when it comes to like picking each other apart and asking those questions, we didn't get too deep into it. But that's definitely a place where you get to know guys and then you can move on from there throughout the seasons ahead of you. So, yeah.
Ricky, you sound very grown up mentally. Like, you know, I think it's sort of a graduation part of it, right? I went through it as a baseball player. Everybody goes through it. Sometimes you got to go through some bad to mentally gain when it just comes to if I'm good. And listening to you talk just about everything, right, about I don't have to throw hard all the time. Like, that's such a grown-up comment to make. How hard have you worked on that part of it, and how far and how proud are you just how far you've come when it comes to that part?
No, absolutely. I think when I go out there, every single time I want to, you know, give it my all, give it 100%. And obviously velo and stuff comes with that. But when you're a starting pitcher and you got to think about the end goal at the same time as thinking about right now, you kind of want to show the team that you're not really trying to blow it all out in one go. And you're thinking about the future of the team and the future of us wanting to win games down the line. So I think as a starter, that's when you really start to think more about when you pick your battles with velo, pick your battles with location, and kind of go from there.
Yeah, you know, Ricky, I was often told that when you look at a AAA player's numbers early in the year, just forget about it because it's friend Mr. Barker.
It's cold. Buffalo.
It's Buffalo. It's freezing cold.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about that. You know, that's got to be a little bit of a mental adjustment too, right? Because
it's a grind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. When I'm from California, so growing up, it was always California, Arizona, Florida. Those are the only places we played. So going to Buffalo in the beginning of the year is something completely new for me, weather-wise, and just being able to work through that. But obviously, as a pitcher, you don't want to be a guy to say, like, all the weather's affecting how the ball's coming out. But I think when you look at everybody's numbers early in the year, you can kind of see there's a little bit of a getting used to it aspect to it. But for me, yeah, it's definitely different, but you gotta work through it. That's part of the game. 30 degrees isn't the best, but you gotta be able to get through it when the time calls for it. So yeah.
Ricky, is there somebody on the staff for the Blue Jays that you sort of look up to, that you would watch just how they attack their game? I don't want to say Chris Bassett. I'm not sure anybody can be like that. Somebody else that you sort of, okay, if you lift your leg this high, the ball come out this way. Is there somebody that you really pay attention to that you think helps you whenever you go pitch?
Specifically, I mean, you look at mindset-wise, obviously Chris Bassett is one of the guys that they just have a different mindset going out there, and yeah. I think that's something I look up to and obviously want to emulate. But mechanically and seeing how guys pitch, everybody's a little bit different. You know, you see guys like Yusei Kikuchi, you see Gausman. I mean, our pitching staff is ridiculous. So when it comes to veteran aspect of it, so just being able to watch those guys and how they do the same things every single day to be prepared for their outings and even throughout their outings, I see specific things that they do that I try to kind of pick apart in my head. But at the same time, we all know that we're a little bit different mechanically, and it's just about finding your comfort zone and what makes you successful. So I think everybody's kind of in their own journey in that aspect too.
Ricky, you've been great with your time. As I said, I know you've got a pitcher's meeting coming up. Thanks so much for doing this. Stay healthy, and we look forward to seeing you up here.
That's great stuff.
Be well.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck.
Take care.
All right. You guys take care.
Thanks.
All righty. That is Ricky Tiedemann, top prospect.
I mean, that's grown-up stuff. He even said our pitching staff or our rotation. I mean, it's just like every little thing he says now, he's actually put some thought into it. And it's just like you, like, again, it's one thing to have stuff and talent. It's another thing to be mentally prepared and strong enough mentally and add the talent and the stuff together. Like, that's a whole different animal. So just listening to him talk sounds like he's got it figured out.
That's why I think there's still something about the Arizona Fall League. I mean, if people don't know,
in it.
There's nobody in the stands. It's friends, family, not even, half
it's 10
the time
o'clock
it's,
games,
it's 10 o'clock
games. Yeah, yeah.
But you are, you know, you're up against another organization's number one or number two prospect.
Yeah.
And it's, if you talk to guys who have gone there, and especially pitchers who go to that, they come back feeling a little, just a little puffed out a little more, especially if they've had success there, because you've gone up against all the guys that, you know, most of these guys are online and they're seeing what this guy done. You know, Ricky faced Jackson Holliday last year.
Yeah.
And if you come out of that, you got to feel pretty good about yourself.
Yeah, I went with Jeff Jenkins, and we bet a dozen bats on who would hit the most home runs in the Arizona Fall League, and he beat me. It's the most disappointing part of my career, just because he was sort of the guy that I was coming up with. Mm-hmm. There was competition there. We were friends. Like, we hit together in the off season. We basically lived together in the off season. It was, you know, sort of a eye-opener that, you know, you got to make some changes. You got to, if you want to compete with the best of the best in your organization and other organizations, you got to do the right thing. Like, you got to be, you know, mentally and physically and just mechanically prepared to compete against the best guys. It sort of tells you where you're at.
Yes.
Yeah, it does. And I, you know, it's good that they, you know, sort of send these guys there. And
oh, I think it's one of the really, 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 really good things baseball has done.
Other than there's no fans there, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And there's no fans there.
No, there are none.
No, that's none.
There's none.
It's like there's zero.
There are.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
You're bringing your own energy.
I mean, it's great if you want. Yeah. You are bringing your own energy.
You are.
It's great if you want to go. I'll tell you one thing. It's great if you're a reporter because you can just go and sit with the scouts.
Absolutely.
Because there's nobody around.
That's the only people there.
There's nobody around. They may tell you to go get them a coffee, but, you know, it's worth it. Ricky Tiedemann's numbers. That's why I didn't want to mention them to him. Ricky Tiedemann's numbers so far.
Well, why are you saying them out loud?
8 innings pitched, 7 hits, 5 runs, 3 home runs, 9 walks, 10 strikeouts. But, you know, and that's what, before Ricky came on, I read out his numbers to Kevin, and Kevin said, take a look at the calendar. He's
in Buffalo. It's always warmer in the big leagues. So I would think early in the season, you know, his numbers would be a little different. I just think, again, he's going to get every opportunity known to man. Oh, yeah. He has tremendous stuff. It's just control the walks, control the velocity. Obviously, people around him have had that conversation and bring that to his attention. That's because that's why he's saying it out loud to us. So he's knowing that going into these starts now, what he needs to work on, how he can refine that, how he can be better at it, which is what you want from it. Because, again, you got that to work with. Mm. It's just refining, you know, the running game and strike one and being a little bit unpredictable and not having to use your best velocity all the time. Like, it's just a lot of things that go into being a really good starting pitcher that he's working on. He's a very young kid, right? He is a kid still.
Put yourself in Ricky Tiedemann's shoes, too. He's just a couple hours, a couple hours depending on the traffic. Well, maybe 8 hours depending on the traffic.
Well,
but
thank you.
Geographically, at least, he's close to the major leagues. He's close to Toronto. He sees it's an older staff, right? You've got guys who are, after this year, are going to have 1 year left in their contract.
And an organization and a pitching coach who think very highly of him.
Correct.
They, you know, you talk about guys with a set number. They do have that for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been told they will not be afraid to use that number in the big leagues.
Oh, listen.
They're not afraid to do that. So now it's sort of a log jam.
Yeah.
And there's just basically no room for him. And they want him to be in that routine of every 5 days, right? Let him basically show them that he can do it and stay healthy. But he ain't going to be far. He's not far away.
No, I think we had to do our sort of season preview with Sportsnet.ca, a bunch of us. And I think one of the things I said is don't be surprised if Ricky Tiedemann is pitching important innings in the summer. I think there's a real good chance.
Yeah, especially where their offense is at. You know, it's if you got good pitching and he can help you keep for the other team from scoring, he'll be here. He's got great stuff. And it seems like the mental side of it, he's got it figured out, which is half the battle.
Yeah, it's yeah, I mean, with him, it's like everything else, man. I just want good health for him.
Yeah.
If he's healthy, everything else
will
take
care of itself. But I think, I'm sure that he, when it starts getting warmer, wants to start dominating people. Like, I got great stuff. I want to dominate you.
Yeah.
Like, I want to add and subtract. I want to throw a breaking ball. I want to steal a strike. I want to put you away with a good changeup. Like, I want to go up and into a righty for strike three. Like, he needs to start seeing it.
is there anything out, right? I mean, looking at, you asked a really good question of him about is there anybody, you know, anybody in this team that he would sort of emulate, or compare him to Yusei Kikuchi for me, because he mentioned Yusei Kikuchi was one of the guys.
Yeah, I think the difference for me anyway from Yusei is, I wrote this down because I didn't want to forget it.
Understanding that Yusei Kikuchi is much farther along in his career than Ricky Tiedemann.
Yeah, he's not hoping, he's expecting results. That, I think, is the most important part for Yusei Kikuchi, is he's not going out there hoping that he gets it done. He's expecting to get it done. I think that's a big deal. And I think now him being able to control the bottom part of the zone with secondary stuff, slow breaking ball, a slider, right? I don't want to throw a submit mixer. I want to get it down there. And if I miss, it's down, right? You can't do damage on that.
No.
That's why his ground ball percentage has went up. And that's why now, because he's refined and he's happy with the mechanics, you see a consistent velocity with the fastball. He can self-correct that arm side miss. We see that all the time, right? When he's struggling, he's missing arm side. It's up and away to a righty, up and into a lefty. But because he's mechanically sounder now, he can self-correct that, adjust that to where it doesn't get out of hand, and he can control that with velocity, consistent velocity, which will make those two secondary pitches that are down that much better. Yeah, I don't think Ricky's there yet, but I think he's trying to be there with his mental approach. That is where it's at, right? I know what I don't do well. Now I know mentally how to fix it. It's just going out there and actually doing it and seeing it actually play out. So he's not far. He's not far away from that. But Yusei wasn't. You know, when Yusei got here, it was that start and stop thing. It was all over the place. You know, the velocity. I said this to you. Where's the 95, 96 at? 97, 98 now. Now it's always there because he's mechanically sound enough, and now he's going out there expecting to deliver instead of hoping to deliver. So, I mean, it's sort of nice to see it play out, because you have a good pitching coach, you have a good organization, and you actually buy into change, because you know it will make you a better player, a better pitcher, and will in turn help a team go where they're trying to go. And that's sort of what you need, right? You need a talented person to buy into change. And they seem to, at least on the pitching side, be able to do that quicker than most teams do it.
We're still awaiting see if there's any update from the Blue Jays on roster moves that will be made today with Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson. Both, again, according to John Schneider, ready to come back. And Jordan Romano certainly suggesting to people yesterday that he was ready to go.
Yeah.
It's going to result in a couple of interesting moves, because Nate Pearson certainly is throwing a spanner into the works by being as good as he has.
Yeah. I would say, if Nate Pearson gets sent down and Mitch White stays, some dudes in that pen will not like that. I know if I were down there, I would not be a fan of that. This is about having the best on our team, and we know who makes this team run right now. And Nate Pearson right now, I know sometimes, you know, he's very all over the place, but right now he's not. And at 99 to 102, with that other slow, really slow breaking ball and that tight little slider he's got, I just don't know. How would you send that now, Jeff?
Like, I
don't know how you would. Give him credit. Whatever he's doing routine-wise is starting to work, and now they're giving him opportunities. Maybe it's just a late bloomer. Maybe he needs to compete against the best to understand how you're supposed to try and compete against the best.
When you look at everything that has gone into him, when you look at all the time, the energy, everything that's gone into Nate Pearson, this is kind of what I wanted to see.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to screw up. I'm not a fan of the karma flow or anything like that. But if this is what I want to see, I cannot go to a guy and say, hey, you know what? You're exactly – this is what we've been waiting for 3 years. Enjoy Buffalo.
Yeah, it sends a message to your team, too, that if you're doing well, you're on our team, because you're going to help us win a baseball game.
Yeah,
I just don't know how you sell the Mitch White thing to – look, they got enough guys that can eat innings when they're getting their tails kicked. You got enough guys. You wouldn't bring Mitch White in the game when they're winning, would you?
Nope.
And they ain't going to – do you think they're going to blow out games on the positive side? That's probably not going to happen. So I'd rather have Nate throwing the dotted 99 down on the way to a righty. I'd rather have that.
Chris LaRue is our Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He's also a former pitcher, so we'll get his take on what the Jays may do with the bullpen and his take in general. We'll get a pitcher's eye view of Chris Bassett and the Jays rotation as well. All that ahead in Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker. Ahead of tonight's second game of the three-game series against the New York Yankees, 7:07 first pitch, is Issei Kikuchi on the mound for the Blue Jays, Carlos Rodon for the New York Yankees. The Jays 3-1 winners last night. Ben Shulman and Chris LaRue had the call of the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And Chris LaRue has joined us.
How about that?
In studio. How about that?
Eh? Looking sharp.
He does. Got that California thing.
This is a really nice studio.
Yeah.
A lot better than the old studio.
Yeah, I can't believe they let us in here.
I can't.
It's amazing, right?
You guys really have
the makeup and the hair people. I like that golf shirt.
Absolutely not.
You don't have any of that?
No.
What the hell?
You got your Travis Matthews shirt.
This is natural beauty.
You guys are getting paid more now.
That's natural beauty. Here it's like being the guy in a GQ.
I
know.
He's pretty.
I know he is.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we don't need
he would be if he trimmed his goatee a little bit.
Thank you.
That's like biker.
Oh, yeah. It is. Thank you. I keep telling him. And the thing is, Kevin still thinks he's 24.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you do get to a certain age and that sucker starts to show a little gray.
It is pretty gray.
That's the thing, though. Salt and pepper's. You know what you're doing.
How about that?
Look at this guy. This guy's like Mr.
You know what you're doing. I know, it's perfect.
That's disgusting. Look at that. You were born with that.
All right.
We're waiting. Whoa, get excited, Jeff.
He's nervous.
I'm frustrated.
Well, no, I'm surrounded by all this natural beauty. It's like I don't know what to do. I just don't.
Barker's starting to get red. Look at him.
He's not used to me giving him accolades or compliments. It is. Well, don't get used to it because it's not going to happen often. We're waiting to see who the Blue Jays how they endeavor to get Eric Swanson and Jordan Romano on the roster tonight. And hopefully before this segment is over, we'll know. So we'll start the conversation. We saw Jimmy Garcia close last night. Obviously, John Schneider, we know the pitching staff, the coaching staff's got great, great confidence in him. So let's just say for argument's sake that Swanson and Romano come back and they're healthy and they're good to go. And let's assume that whatever moves are made to get them on the roster don't involve guys like Trevor Richards, Chad Green, or Jimmy Garcia, which I think is pretty safe.
That's a fact.
How do they, Chris, how do they utilize all of these guys?
Is Romano the closer, I think, is what he's asking.
I personally don't think he's the closer.
Okay.
I think
that's too.
So, Jordan, I mean, what's your opinion?
I went back a little. I thought John Schneider said that when Romano comes back, he's closing. And I admit that I can't find it anywhere.
Who said that?
Maybe I dreamed that
you're
up. I don't know. I mean, there's that whole thing. You don't lose a job because of an injury, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I am with you guys. I look at Jimmy Garcia. And
what about Tom Brady and who's the other guy? Who's the guy that lost his job because of Tom Brady?
Yes,
quarterback.
Football question.
I forgot who it was, but Tom Brady took
Drew
somebody
else or something like that.
Drew Bledsoe. Who it was. Yeah,
yeah.
That's Drew Bledsoe, who was the face of the franchise for the Patriots. Yeah. I'm not saying Jordan Romano is going to lose his job, but Jimmy Garcia, he's looked better over the last 2 or 3 weeks, and this is probably going to get me in some hot water, but then Jordan Romano has looked in a long time.
Yeah, I think maybe you could argue he has a few more tools in the tool shed to get lefties out. I think that's what it is, right? Look, I think there's something to Jordan Romano having the second most saves the last 2 years with 72. I think there's something to that. But I do think when you got a nice toy down there in Jimmy Garcia, who has never looked the way he's been looking the last however many outings he's been looking this way, and Jordan Romano, there's some unknown there, right?
But I'm not saying that Jordan Romano is not a great big league closer. Yeah. That's not what I'm saying.
No, we're talking tonight.
I'm saying when I look at Jimmy Garcia over the last, I don't know how many outings he has this year, 7 or 8, he's incredible.
Yeah.
He's got that 97 to 100 mile an hour sinker.
Yeah.
Right? He's got that even the slower breaking ball, the hard slider. When I think of a big league lockdown closer, like when he came in the game last night and faced Aaron Judge, Rizzo. Anthony Rizzo, who's the first one?
Soto.
I mean, it's like nothing to him. He could throw that sinker down the middle and Soto swing.
Okay,
right
let me ask
sure,
you a question.
Yes, he gave up. There was 3 fly balls. I understand that.
Yeah, but
three of the best hitters in baseball.
How does John sell it? How does Pete Walker sell it? You have a closer who's been really good the last couple of years. You got a guy who's really good right now, who's been shut down and is basically a no-brainer. But you got to sell it to the two dudes, right?
How do you tell one guy?
Yeah, I understand that. But there's as well as anybody, it starts from the ninth inning backwards. So you got the guy in the ninth inning. Now, again, I'm sure they'll do that by committee. And, you know, it's the where you're at in the order. We'd rather have Jimmy 2, 3, 4. If that comes around the eighth inning, that's a good sell, right? You go to Jimmy and you go, hey, the meat of the order, you're getting it. You know, it'll be easier to sell it that way. These are grown-ups. They've been around a long time, right? How do you sell that?
So there's obviously ego involved.
Absolutely.
Jordan Romano has been the guy for 3+ years now.
Yeah.
Right? He has 100 saves or however
Although,
many saves he has.
I'm just going to jump in. As Kevin pointed out last year, when they went out and got Jordan Hicks towards the end of the year, we saw.
Yeah, they were telling us without telling us.
Yeah.
That they didn't like him in a ninth inning late in the season.
But that's because he was a little bit tired. His breaking ball wasn't as sharp.
They abused him basically all season.
But yes, there were some things.
Right.
Along with Trevor Richards.
Yeah.
Even Tim Meza, you could tell by the end of the season that there wasn't as much zip through the strike zone.
Yep.
There wasn't as much bite on that breaking ball. So I think that and I say this all the time, when I was with the Yankees for that short period of time, Brian Cashman was so good at being honest. He would just come up to you. And, you know, GMs and managers, they beat around the bush.
And, absolutely.
And as men, we want to be told exactly where we stand, right? I want Brian Cashman to come up to me. I want Ross Atkins to come up to me and be like, hey, this is what we're thinking.
Mm.
100% truth. Do you not agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I do, but I think sometimes the truth can be stretched depending on the person.
No, why right? Why stretch? Well, say, hey, you missed almost all of spring training.
Maybe.
You don't have the stuff or the confidence right now to be in that ninth inning. Why don't we work you in? Why don't we leave Jimmy as a closer? Why don't we leave Chad Green as the eighth inning guy? And then you kind of work your way in.
Maybe they can say, remember, end of last season, the stuff just wasn't there. Now
I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the fact that he was just hurt. That's it.
Maybe.
He was just hurt. Yeah. Jimmy Garcia has been unreal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I'm talking like one of the best closers
in
baseball.
Yeah. No brainer. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I would much rather have him out there than anybody else.
It's fair right now. Yeah. It's not going to be an easy sell, though. You've been in those games.
Well, I've never been a big league closer. I've never been a lockdown big league closer like Jordan Romano.
Yeah, they walk different. You know, they talk different. They act different. So you got to be careful.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, from a distance, though, I look at it this way as well. I mentioned this to you last night. If you look at this bullpen now, it's almost like John Schneider can go into a game with 2 separate bullpens.
Yeah.
Closer, Romano, Garcia. Setup guys, Green.
Swanson. Yeah.
Lefty, Cabrera.
Richards could have he's got a bunch of guys.
Tim Meza. Right now, like, if you look at it, you could. It's almost like this is my bullpen, and it would never be this simplistic, but you could go, this is my bullpen in game 1 of the series. This is my bullpen in game 2 of the series. This is my bullpen in game 3.
Yeah.
You know, a bull, quote unquote bullpen by committee, but it is, it's, I mean, you're dealing with guys, all of whom have track records here for the most part, right? It's not like you can go to, guy's 21 years old. You have to bide your time with the exception. I mean, I don't know how old is Nate Pearson. He's not 21. Most of these guys are in their 30s or late 20s now. So, and everybody kind of has their role and wants to get paid. I just think it's a fascinating discussion that goes beyond how you get these two on the roster.
Yeah.
So what's your opinion? My opinion is Jimmy Garcia.
Yeah.
And then you kind of work Romano into.
Yeah. Yeah. The equation. I don't think it's that easy. I agree 100%.
If it was easy.
I think he will get the meat of the order.
Okay.
That can happen
in the eighth inning.
So highest leverage.
You could close the game in the eighth inning. You know as well as anybody that game can be won or lost in the eighth inning.
Highest leverage last night was in the ninth inning.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it just sort of comes around. You know, I think it's going to be, you know, there's a little competition there too. I think this time of the year is never a bad thing, right? It's one guy's hot, the other guy that's coming in sort of understands that I'm still trying to get my feet wet and those kind of things. Early in the season, I wanted to ask you this because you've been through this. Velocity matter to you? Like, how can you overcome it when you don't have it? How did you do it?
That means you've won the argument, question. By the way, if Barker's
not
changes
really.
Topic.
Not really. I think we're both right. I don't think there's a wrong or a right answer the question.
I mean, I think we're agreeing with each other.
Sort of,
you're just kind of. So you're talking more about ego than I'm talking.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm just talking about facts.
Absolutely.
So I went through this exact situation. My velocity early on in my career when I was with Pittsburgh was mid to upper 90s. I had one good year in the big leagues, and I had that good year throwing mid to upper 90s. Next year, come into spring training, and Clint Hurdle says to me, he says, how would you like to be our setup guy? And my career was just like, I'm looking at the cars on the internet and the houses and, you know, all that stupid stuff.
Absolutely.
And then the end of spring training, I tore my pec, and my velocity for the rest of my career was 90 to 93. And we know that 90 to 93 grows on trees.
Yep.
Right? 95 to 97 back in our day didn't grow on trees.
Nope.
Right? So I had to reinvent myself. So I had to become a changeup guy, a sinker guy, you know, locate my fastball in and out. And I think that if you don't have the velocity, that's what you have to do. You can't rely, like Tim Mesa, for instance, right? Like if he stayed, and he's not because he's shown flashes of that velocity that he had a couple years ago. But if he was a guy that was 89 to 91, he could still succeed. Mm-hmm. He just has to have better command, right? And the reason why he looked so bad early on in the season is because he was throwing like he was throwing 95, but he was 89, 91.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you're an 89 to 91, you have to throw inside. You have to throw that backdoor slider.
You almost have to be perfect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have to be perfect.
Yeah.
So in answer to your question, I don't know if that's the right answer, but
you just have to learn
to pitch backwards. Yeah. In my opinion.
I want to hog him just real quick.
Go ahead.
You were talking about Tim Mesa and the extra gear, and they were talking about he was getting on the side of the baseball. That's why it was running instead of sinking, mm-hmm. and the velocity had went down like it was more 91s than 93, 94s. Mm-hmm. Why would just staying on top of a sinker make it be harder and move more? Explain that to me.
Well, I don't know if staying behind it makes it harder, but it definitely makes the sink different.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you get on the side of it, mm-hmm. it's more horizontal sink, which is easier to hit because it stays on that bat path.
Mm-hmm.
When you get on top of it and you really get the extension out in front, like Tim Mesa has the last couple of days, you see the action through the zone. It's not just like this lazy little horizontal.
So instead of a sling, it's extension.
Extension, you get out in front.
That makes it easier. Yeah, okay.
That makes it the bite at the at. When it gets to the plate, and I mean, you know, I'm answering this question, but
well,
you know,
because people don't understand that, right?
You see the sink, it's more like that than like that, and it goes underneath the bat. That's why you see guys like Clay Holmes. If his sink was horizontal and it's kind of just like that little run, it would be so much easier to hit.
Yeah, it's a game of inches, right?
You see that he gets out in front like Tim Mesa has the last couple of outings.
Yeah,
you get out in front, and that sink goes. Boom.
Yeah.
Almost like a split finger.
That's
when Tim Mays is good.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Can you explain to me why Yusei Kikuchi has had, from a pitcher's point of view, why you think he's had so much success against the Yankees? Mm. I mean, the numbers are, and it's here and Yankee Stadium, but.
I said I have no idea.
Yeah.
That's what I said?
No, I.
Because I ask around the people that are with him every single day. They have no idea. They're just fingers crossed saying they hope it continues.
So
that's
I,
all they say.
I don't know exactly why a certain pitcher is better against a certain team or whatever, but I do know that watching Yusei over the last couple of years, he is infinitely better when he throws strike one. When he gets ahead with that fastball or with that backdoor breaking ball, he is infinitely better. So if you watch him tonight and he's spraying that baseball, he throws a lot of fastballs arm side high.
He does, yeah.
So righties, arm yeah. side high.
Mm-hmm.
And when he gets on top of that baseball and it's just boom, right into that
yeah.
zone,
yeah.
And he's ahead 0-1, dude, he's got some of the best stuff in baseball.
He does, absolutely, yeah.
95 to 97 miles an hour from the left side. I mean, then he has that slow breaking ball, the hard slider. I love watching him when he's throwing strikes. But when he's not throwing strikes, ooh.
See, nobody knows.
It's painful.
Why he's good against the Yankees.
It's painful.
I don't think they know.
But I don't think it's a thing. I don't think he's just good against the Yankees.
Yeah,
I think he's just throwing strike one.
I don't think they care either. I do think him being able to throw the slider and the curveball down now a little bit better,
yeah.
and his misses are good down with that.
Good
and
misses,
that,
right.
Absolutely, and that velocity between that slow breaking ball and his consistent velocity on the fastball are much better, and it's consistent, and that way it enables him to miss a little bit better. So, I mean, he's got really good stuff.
I do think watching him mechanically, sometimes the reason why he leaves the baseball arm side high a lot because he tries to do too much.
Yeah,
it's almost like hitting, right? Like if you pull that front shoulder out.
Yeah, Vladdy.
Good luck hitting the baseball,
absolutely.
Right? You'll just hit a ground ball to shortstop every time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm going to ask. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, same with Yusei. He pulls that front shoulder, and then it leaves the arm lagging behind, mm-hmm. and then the fastball is arm side high every single time. So when he stays through that baseball, keeps that shoulder on the catcher, it's a boom.
Yeah, it's
every
a tough take.
Time.
That's what it is.
I got a hitter. I got a pitcher here. I want you to tell me what you saw from Luis Gil last night. And then I want Barker to tell me what you saw.
You want me to tell you mechanically?
I was actually
listening to your show on the way home when I got in the car.
Mm-hmm.
I was right, wasn't I?
No.
And I don't agree with Barker 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. I do agree with him a lot of the time, though. And last night was one of them where he was talking about
for what
how hard it is.
We were talking about, I was saying, how the hell... what was it? Four walks, a wild pitch.
Yeah, seven walks. Oh, you mean early on.
In that inning.
Yeah.
How do you let him off the hook and only get two runs? And Barker's response, typical Barker, was, well, how many times have you stood in the box against the Luis? Which is a stupid question.
That's a great question.
Well, you could ask that of anything.
Yeah.
You could ask that of anybody. 90% of the people we have in the show, you could ask that about.
Well,
they don't know. Jason Stark has noticed. Anyhow, so, okay.
I have stood in the box against a guy like that, John Axford.
Wow.
Ooh, early John Axford.
He was wild, too. He's tough, right?
Oh, yeah.
What do you swing at? What do you not swing at?
So I said this last night on the broadcast, right? You face, first of all, to me, Luis Gil should not be in the big leagues. Like, he needs to be an extended right now, working on his mechanics. He's got an incredible arm. And we talked to Kevin Biggio after the game last night, and Kevin said he's going to have a great career. And I agree. He just needs to throw strikes. But when you get a guy that has that much life on the ball,
mm-hmm.
and he's just spraying the baseball all over the place at 98, 99 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden he's just darting three fastballs.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys are so hard to hit, man.
Yeah.
So hard to hit.
Yeah.
And you saw it with Bo last night. Bo was, like, incredibly uncomfortable in the box last
night. Yeah, and it's the arm slot, right?
It's the arm slot.
It's like sidearm, and it's running all over the place. And then he throws the 90-mile-an-hour changeup on the black away to a righty.
His changeup has a lot of life.
It does.
Right?
It's impossible to attack that. Like, where do you look?
You don't have a plan.
You don't.
You don't have a plan.
Yeah,
you basically just crumple up your plan and you throw it out.
See, ball, hit ball,
exactly.
They don't do it anymore. Yeah,
exactly.
So that's what I said. So, see, I was right.
Yeah, okay.
There you go. See?
Right.
It is an impossible at bat. And the dude's got tremendous stuff.
If he was throwing, let's say, more hittable velocity like 93, 95, then it's easy to just kind of walk around the base.
You could let it travel. You wouldn't have to cheat to get to the fastball. Right? You could not swing at the changeup. You can maybe look for the changeup.
Right.
Well, you can't do that when it's 97, 98, 99. It's
with life. With life.
Yeah, and
it's not.
He's releasing it behind you. Like, good luck.
All right, I'm kidding.
And you look at so I'll just
if I had a white flag, I'd be waving it.
So you look at a guy like, and I love Bowden, but like, his fastball is relatively straight.
It is,
right?
Yeah.
There's life, but it's not the same kind of life. You look at a guy like Nate Pearson. Relatively straight fastball. If those guys were if those guys were spraying the ball all over the place, it'd be easy to kind of sit back and wait for your pitch.
Mm-hmm.
But a guy like Luis Gil, man, his ball's boom.
Yeah.
Boom,
yeah, good luck.
Through the zone. Good luck. And good luck. I can't wait to talk to Bo today, man, because I'm going to be like, what was it like? He'll be like, I don't want to face that guy anymore. I guarantee it.
He won't say that to us.
Well,
he won't do it.
That was the second time they faced him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look. And he looked the same. He looked like that 2 weeks ago.
He got the automatic, the violation against him before he started the game.
Yeah.
1-0 because he got a pitch clock violation before the game even started.
That's his excuse.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see that, you know, I guess that is
effective wildness. Screaming, they were 1-for-10. How dare they?
What was your thing? We got the
W.
No, you said we got the W.
Said, sometimes you just got to be walking away from the park going, that dude's filthy. Be lucky we won.
Have you ever heard of? I mean, you have heard of the term effectively wild?
Yes.
That guy's the definition of effectively
absolutely
wild.
See?
Okay.
That guy.
The
he needs to be sent down, though.
The Jays lineup. Jays lineup is out. It's Springer, Guerrero, Bichette, Turner, Schneider, Jansen, Clement, IKF, Varsho, Kikuchi on the mound. Still no word as to the activation of Romano or Swanson. Chris Bassett talked about this after the game. Everybody wants to play every day, I would presume, but I've got to think that Alejandro Kirk is probably breathing.
Yeah, he's the one that don't want to play.
He's breathing a sigh of relief right now.
Yeah.
He's got to be breathing a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
What'd you see from him? He's played a lot of games before, but this is the first time we've seen him start a year and have an extended run. Kevin and I had this discussion yesterday. Is he a guy that, for you, starts 2 of 7 games? You know, Danny Jansen healthy, starts 5 of 7. Kirk starts
4-3. That's me.
4-3.
4-3. Five out of seven.
I mean, I think you're gonna. You probably want him matched up with Bassett, right? Because that does seem to be
probably
to be a thing.
Yeah.
Like, what have you? What did you see?
So
from
coming
Alejandro
into this
Kirk?
Season, I was on with Justin and Ailish, and I said to Justin, I said that I think Alejandro Kirk is top 5 or 6 catchers in the big leagues.
Wow.
That's with the right amount of rest,
right? Yeah.
So if he's catching 4 out of 7, let's say,
mm-hmm.
4 out of 7 seems about right for me. I think, well, do you think that's a lot?
For
4 out of 7?
For Kirk or Jansen?
Oh, for Kirk.
Oh, I mean, I'd rather have Danny Jansen.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I'd rather have Danny Jansen catching.
He's second in defensive runs saved
Kirk.
In 2024 at +3. Cal Raleigh's first.
I think Kirk is a much better hitter than he's showing right now, even though he's been hot the last, 3 days or so.
Mm-hmm.
He's starting to really stay through the ball, and you talk about this a lot, using the big part of the field,
mm-hmm. yep.
staying back and using that big part of the field, using the opposite field. Those are keys to any hitter's success. And I know I was a pitcher, but I was a hitter in college, so I know that if you're pulling off the baseball, you're not going to have as much success as if you stay through that baseball and try to use the big part of the field. Even Joey Votto said this. He said good hitters just use the big part of the field.
Yeah, I think when he's tired, he stands taller at the plate.
Yeah.
When he's good, he's wider and he sits in his legs.
Because his legs are fresh.
And the plane is the same all the time, right?
Yeah.
He's not raising out to, change eye levels and try and, allow his eyes to direct the barrel to where it goes. He doesn't need to do that. That's why it just looks sometimes like his swing is sort of looks like a windmill, right? Mm-hmm. It looks like he's starting it way back here and mm-hmm. it looks like a windmill because he's not using his legs. He doesn't have good rotation. He rarely has great rotation anyway, but when he plays a ton behind the plate, it's really noticeable, and I think that's when you start seeing the coaches and the manager going, he's probably the one guy that's raising his hand saying, thanks, Danny. I appreciate that.
Do you think he's a top 10 catcher in baseball?
How do you define that?
Everything, total package.
I mean, I haven't put a ton of thought into that.
The defensive numbers would say that.
I mean, tricking umpires, he's really good at that. Like the blocking, I think he's pretty good at that. He's trying to get better at throwing. Like you could tell, it's a little quicker. You didn't have the.
There's a lot of fade.
It does,
ball.
Right? That's why he's trying to
That's
get.
Tough.
He's trying to jump out of the crouch quicker, get the ball up a little bit quicker. I think that's to each his own, right? It's like you could ask, 7 or 8 different people that question, and they may give you 7 or 8 different answers.
I bet if you ask Chris Bassett, he'll say yes.
Probably. It's just same page and shaking off and not getting frustrated and. Yeah. It's a lot, man. Like, it's, he's probably got headaches. If you're Kirky, you're probably just thinking, there's no more to push. It's like, I don't know how to push it anymore.
There's no way. There's
a transmitter not out there.
You can see him. He's like, nope.
If you're catching Chris Bassett, there's no way you know what pitch he wants to throw.
No, absolutely.
I mean, you're probably right once in a while, but there's no way you know exactly what pitch he wants
to
throw.
Yeah, it's like if he shakes the first time you push it, you're like, yes!
Yeah.
I've got to think the hitters probably know that too, right?
Probably.
The hitters.
But how would he know?
This was your point. This was your point. How do you plan?
You don't.
How do you plan for Chris Bassett?
You look windows.
You can't.
You look windows.
Yeah.
But then he starts reading swings, and he changes his approach against you on the fly, and then you got sort of no idea. That's what I said. If he has the velocity on the sinker, you're done.
That's why.
Done. That's it.
Well, you need command, a little bit of command.
Yeah, but most of those two come hand in hand, I think, with him, because you could tell it's coming out free and easy. He's not forcing it to have it the velocity he wants it to have. If he's just got it because he's got it, you're done.
And you know,
like, you are just.
And the other thing, too, if you're a hitter, you're looking out at him. You're looking at his body language, and you're thinking, man, something's bothering this guy. I got him on the
I said that a few times. I was like, he always looks like he's hurt.
Yeah, I got him on the ropes. I got him on the ropes.
We were laughing about this.
Yesterday, you know, noticed that he didn't have the transmitter for the first two innings. So Kevin says, I'm sure that what he's done is they probably sat down and said, let's script out the two innings. And then we'll play off that. And Buck is saying the same thing. Buck said, I don't know why, he's a pitcher. I don't understand pitchers anyhow. But I'm sitting there thinking, he's screwing with people by doing this. Right, this is like chess. And then we find out it's because the Velcro.
It was torn.
Fastener was torn.
Yeah.
So, we're sitting there thinking that.
He's two steps ahead.
That's what we felt. We felt, he's screwing with them. There's no way they're getting hits. And it's just come to find out it was Velcro.
Yeah.
This has been great, Chris. Thanks for doing
wonderful.
This.
Yeah. Great job.
I feel so rich in here.
Yeah, doesn't it? Make you feel that way?
There's enough lights. We'll get you on again. Thanks for doing this, man.
We'll see you guys.
Chris Lurie will have the call of the game along with Ben Shulman tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We will take a break and be back with more Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank God we got this before he went off the air. The Jays have made the following roster moves. Jordan Romano has been reinstated from the 15-day IL. Eric Swanson has been reinstated from the 15-day IL. Nate Pearson.
Yeah.
Has been optioned to AAA Buffalo, and Mitch White has been designated for assignment. Let's wait and see how many teams claim Mitch White.
I'm sure there'll be somebody.
They can always reinvent the wheel.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So there you go, Mitch White. I mean, after using up 15 of his 9 lives.
It's not his fault.
No, it's not.
No, it's not his fault.
It's not, but the fact is he's used up. He is, but they've given him plenty of opportunities to do that. Nate Pearson, man, I mean, I don't know who else they would have sent down. Clearly, they want to keep Bowden Francis to piggyback with Yariel Rodriguez. Yeah. It seems to me like Nate's the only other guy who could go, but
until he runs out of options, this is probably what you're going to see from Nate Pearson. I mean, hopefully mentally this doesn't mess with him. That's the one thing.
You've got to send him down to Buffalo and say you're closing him Buffalo. Don't you send him down and say
I don't think he cares. Like I think he's to the point now that he feels like he's a big leaguer. He doesn't care what he's doing down there. Hopefully this doesn't mess with him. Hopefully he goes down there and continues to throw hard and the stuff's good and the secondary stuff he can throw for strikes and just keep doing your part. This has nothing to do with him. First time we can ever say this.
This has nothing
to do with Nate Pearson.
I just got a text from somebody who was in John Schneider's media availability yesterday. Apparently he said Romano's the closer when he comes back.
Yeah, I don't know.
So we'll wait and see what we'll wait and see what John says today. I mean, I'm not
a closer, I guess.
There's that old thing. You don't lose your job because of injury. I think we may be, he's a closer now. Let's see what happens in 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, I would think he's probably happy a little bit with the Jimmy Garcia thing. You can sort of rove him around, right? You can pitch him in the sixth inning. You can pitch him in the seventh, the eighth, the ninth, if you have to. Like, there's a lot of innings you can pitch him in. He's used to getting loose anytime that you need him to get loose, which I don't think some of the other guys can do this time of the year. You know, Jordan Romano may be one of those guys, sort of a little bit like Chad Green, right? You need to sort of solidify the inning. This is your inning. Mm-hmm. Get ready mentally, physically, mechanically for this inning. Jimmy Garcia is not that way. I think that's the strength that he has that the other guys maybe don't have. Maybe he doesn't need a set inning, which will only make that team better because his stuff is a playing.
Well,
it is a play.
And as you pointed out, you know, the meat of the order can very easily roll around in the eighth inning.
You
and
can, you know, lose the game in the eighth.
If you're only going to be scoring 3 to 5 runs a game.
Most of the time, right, the middle of the order is coming up in the eighth inning. A lot of the times that happens,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just because of the way it's working out. And you sort of sometimes need the best guy. And, again, I'm sure John's going to put Jimmy in a bunch of those spots because he's right now probably their best bullpen arm.
I know you were sent down by the Milwaukee Brewers after making the team in spring training.
Yeah, I've been sent down a bunch of times.
Were you ever sent down after thinking, I've done everything they want me to do? Like, I'm in a good place. I can't believe this is happening. Were you ever in that position where maybe, again, we don't know what Nate Pearson has had it explained to him and he's you know, he gets it.
No,
he knows,
he's ticked. That's a lie.
All right. These tick.
Freezing cold.
But have you been in that situation where you've kind of, you've done everything people want you to do? And not only that, but the performance is there. Well, small sample size, but the performance is there. And then you get called in, you say, hey, we've got to send you out. Like, how do you...
Yeah, not really. Not really. I think the first time I ever got sent down was the hardest thing I'd ever done. Like, I can remember I was crying in San Diego. Yeah, I'm not afraid to say that. I was crying in San Diego in my hotel because, you know, you put a lot into that. You put a lot of effort.
And you'd made a team out of spring training, right?
Absolutely. And I was doing decent. I wasn't awful. Like, I was doing decent, and I was starting to take steps forward, and I was hitting the fastball the way I was supposed to be hitting. I think it's hitting 240.
You could have 240. You'd be making $3.5 million right now.
I'd be hitting cleanup for the Blue Jays. Yeah. You know, squish the bug, rotating.
You
hitting homers, that kind of thing. But, yeah, I think that was the hardest time I'd ever got to sit down. And then after that, it was a sort of a separation between the next time I was in the big leagues. I was a little bit more grown up. I was just happy to be in the big leagues, making a little bit more money than I was making when I was in the minor leagues. And, you know, you can sort of accept it that way. When you're getting called up, you can sort of do the math. If, you know, I get called up this day, you know, then it was they couldn't send you down in September. So if you got called up, say, the end of August – You know, you made it through the first week of September, you was in the big leagues the rest of the year, which means you're getting big league money for a month, which is a lot better than getting that month in the minor league. So, yeah, you know, again, I was sort of used to it. Yeah, there is a lot of times where I will say this. I was in the minor leagues and they were calling up prospects.
Is that a worse feeling?
Sucked, and I wasn't that way.
Is that a worse feeling?
Absolutely. And I actually have went to the manager and been like, you do know who you're calling up, right? And they always give you the same answer, like, it ain't me calling them up. Don't be mad at me. Mm-hmm. Well, I am mad at you. So that's way worse than being called up and then being sent down. You get called up just because that guy's a prospect. They got a little bit more money in him than they do in you. You're way better than that guy. It's like way better. I've been there. I'm not going to mention any names, but I've been there before. And I actually said to the guy, I can't believe you're getting called up because, you know, it's cutthroat down there. Like, it is. Like, everybody thinks it's peaches and roses and everybody's their buddy. Absolutely not. And, you know, you get there's a little tension there. Like, I can't believe you're getting called up and not me. Because it's not that way. You know the way organizations work, Jeff. You've been around long enough to understand that it is. You got a little invested. You know, you get traded for a guy. It's sort of like Mitch White. You got traded. You're making the team. You don't want to look silly. You want to at least act like you put some investment into that player. You're going to give him every opportunity. It's sort of that kind of thing. So I think it's more about that's a little tougher to take than the actual being sent down. After you've been sent down the first time, it's sort of. But at this Nate, I wouldn't be too happy if I'm Nate.
How do you think you know John?
I might
well.
Be on my I might be on the phone with my agent saying, why don't you call around, see if you can get me traded? I mean, I'm not saying that's what Nate would do, but Nate, that stuff, we haven't seen that stuff from Nate consistently that we're seeing now. Nate's a big leaguer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the first time I've ever said that. I'm always the first guy to say, where's the velocity at? I mean, we talk about this velocity all the time, and now all of a sudden we're starting to see it, and now he's got two different breaking balls, and now he's not in the big leagues. If I'm Nate, I'm chapped. It's just me. I'm probably on the phone my agent going, hey, call him around. Call Ross and ask if he'll trade me. I want to be in the big leagues.
How do you think – you know John pretty well. How do you think John would pass a message on to him? I understand
he'll be back. There's always injuries. Things happen. And if I'm Nate, I'm rolling my eyes. Sorry. It's more money up here. Every once in a while, again, I know it's a team-oriented game and you're supposed to talk the right kind of game, and you know as well as anybody, you got a short little window there to make as much money as you could possibly make. You ain't making that much in the minor leagues. And now that you've finally figured it out and you can compete against the best of the best because you got the equipment to do it now, well, that's a tough take, man.
Well,
just me. Maybe he's wired differently than I am.
The only other way you sell it to him, and you can't say to a guy, okay, if not you, who? But I keep getting back to this. Who else is there that they could send down?
Yeah, there's not any. That's why I said
Paolo Espina, he's down in AAA, isn't he?
Yeah, again, if you're Nate, you're thinking the same thing on the you know, the bus ride or the Uber ride down to Buffalo, you're thinking to yourself, exactly what you just said. When's my next opportunity coming? Unless somebody gets hurt, I'm sort of like ninth or tenth in line for a bullpen. When I finally figured it out and I got really good stuff and I'm very confident, that's what I said. I'm assuming that there would be a conversation had between him and his agent that would be, why not give Ross a call and ask why and if you could trade me?
Yeah, I mean.
You wouldn't?
Oh, if I'm a player?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is the part of it that I don't think a lot of people understand and a lot of people know that. And right now, I know probably Nate understands it because he can do math. He knows that he has options. You know, the other guys in there are a little older and they got their roles and, you know, sort of solidified on what you're trying to do down there. And John's got certain guys he's going to go to at the back end and you sort of don't fit in that piece. But you're thinking to yourself, I don't fit in this team. But, boy, my stuff would play somewhere else. And I finally figured it out. I could pitch somewhere on the seventh inning for another team.
Yeah, I wonder how, we often say, we often talk about agents or players going to teams through their agents and asking for a trade. I wonder how often that really does happen.
A lot of it. I mean, we're human beings. We get mad, too. We don't like organizations. I've been on plenty of them that I didn't like. The Nationals, I despised them. They were bringing three first basemen to AAA.
Your story.
And I went to the whoever was running the minor leagues and been like, how's this work? I got 290 homers in minor leagues. How's this working? Who's playing where? And then I got released the next day. So you can imagine how I took that.
Yeah.
Not well.
No.
So, yeah, like there's, you know, woe is me, boo-hoo conversations, but it's cutthroat, and this is sort of part of it, and I feel for Nate.
Well,
Nate's earned the right to be a big leaguer now.
Yeah, you know, I guess there's always, we've always talked about the possibility of a trade at some point, but, not necessarily of Nate, but I don't know. Maybe one of the things that has happened is Nate's showing enough that other teams there might be a renewed interest.
Oh, boy. I mean, if you're another team and you're thinking, man, that 99 to 102, and he's locating down and away with 99 to a right-handed hitter, and he can flip that slow breaking ball and be unpredictable, absolutely. Why couldn't he pitch in the seventh and eighth inning? I'm not saying by no means am I saying he's a closer. But you could give him that hybrid role, pitching him, making sure you're pocketing it right and getting him a couple of right-handed batters. I mean, that stuff's playing.
I'm going to go back to what I asked you a little earlier, not because I wasn't unhappy with the question, but because you've kind of addressed it now. So Nate goes down to AAA. If you are the Blue Jays, do you say to him, we want you to go down to AAA and close?
I'm sure he's rolled his eyes already.
That's not going to make it any easier, but –
for the Blue Jays? Should they be doing that?
I guess.
Give them the ninth.
Does it matter?
I mean, if you're gonna,
what does it matter when you're pitching down there?
I don't. That's what I'm. I don't know.
I don't think so. I'm not sure. You'd have to ask Nate.
Go down
that.
And close the triple.
It's not the big leagues. I think that'll be his answer. At least I look at this. If he's a competitor like I think he is, that better be his answer. I'm a big leaguer. I don't care where I pitch. Throw me in the sixth inning. At least that would be my answer. Again, I hope this doesn't screw him up mentally.
Well, that's
because this is a little bit of a hurdle now for him to overcome. That is not his fault, and I think sometimes as a player, that's very hard to understand. Even though you can do the math, figure that you're sort of the odd guy out. You get it, but dang it, boy, that ride to where you're ending up is a hard one.
Yeah,
I've taken that ride; it ain't easy.
And I think human nature would be what. Regardless of what they say, you're going, what could I have done better? Do they really believe that?
Buck came on this show yesterday and said, was it yesterday?
Yep.
Said, that's the best we've ever seen Nate look. And I could not agree more. That's
absolutely
electric stuff. And now he ain't here. And now as a player, it's time for you to put on your big boy pants and figure out a way to overcome this. And hopefully he goes down there and dominates. And you know, I never want to see anybody get traded from the Blue Jays because he's got really good stuff now and he seems to have figured it out mentally, but I'm sure
wonder.
That conversation is being had. I know if it was me, I'd have called my agent already. That's why you got him.
A couple of things we didn't touch on today. I was remiss. I was going to mention it on Blue Jays Talk last night because we were sitting right next to the Yankees broadcast booth. But John Sterling has called it quits as the voice of the Yankees. Son of a gun, I'd forgotten that he also called hockey. He also called the New York Islanders, which I'd completely forgotten about. I'm going to try to find Ryan Spader is the guy's name. He sent out a tweet about John Sterling. I mean, most of you have heard John Sterling. We've had him on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Poking fun at John Sterling at times has been a cottage industry because John Sterling has been around so long. It's like anything else. When you have a body of work, people can, if people want to poke fun at you.
Do something that's funny.
Listen to this. John Sterling, who has announced that he's stepping down effective immediately as the voice of the radio voice of the Yankees, and we're hoping there's no health issues. I know the Yankees are planning to have a day for John. We're hoping there's no health issues. John Sterling, think about the team we're talking about. He's called 29.5% of all games in Yankees history.
Wow. That's crazy.
This includes 49.9% of New York's postseason games. Now, admittedly, there are more postseason games than there are now.
Yeah.
This blew me away. He's called 100% of Derek Jeter's plate appearances. Think about that.
Wow.
He's called 100% of Derek Jeter's plate appearances.
That's pretty cool. I can only remember the first time I met John was at the stadium, and he treated me like he'd known me for 50 years.
He always does.
I never will forget that. He didn't know me until I introduced myself. He's obviously been on our show. You know, I'm sure he... My voice is hard to not remember, but I'm sure he knew me as with my voice, but he didn't know me what I looked like, or he acted like he'd known me forever. I never will forget that. So I got a lot of time for John and I hope the industry remembers him and enjoyed what he did. And I'm sure Yankees fans are going to celebrate him on Saturday and give him all the love he deserves.
Yeah, it is some of the stories. And again, I just forgot how. Another guy like that, Dave Sims, the Mariners voice. I forgot that Dave Sims has covered NBA basketball and NFL. Those guys that have been around for that long, he covered Julius Erving, Dave Sims, and it's just. It's so hard to fathom with all the travel and the demands and good God, you're calling the Yankees.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
You make a mistake calling the Yankees and
you're going to hear about it.
You're going to hear about it.
So we certainly wish John Sterling all the best.
Absolutely.
Again, I'm not going to read anything into why the announcement was made.
It was quick.
When it was now.
Yeah.
It was quick. It seems as if the Yankees had kind of, it seems as if they'd been working in some other voices alongside Susan Waldman. But again, we wish John all the best.
Mm-hmm.
And he will be missed. Another thing, well, this happened today. I didn't have a chance to talk about it out of the gate. But Whitey Herzog passed away today. I think he was 92 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Hall of Fame manager with the St. Louis Cardinals. Hall of Fame baseball executive. I mean, Whitey was a minor league, ran farm systems, ran major league teams, was general manager, was a manager. I wouldn't say that he invented, they called Whitey Ball.
Mm-hmm.
His nickname was the White Rat, but if you think of his teams, the Kansas City Royals and the St. Louis Cardinals, you think of, you know, Ozzie Smith and Willie McGee and Tommy Herr, and they were just, they were just electric teams. They could tear up the base paths. They won with pitching and defense, and Whitey was, I sent out this little story on Twitter. When I started covering baseball in 1989, I was hired by the Montreal Gazette from the Calgary Herald, and I'd seen like 4 major league games live in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. Never written major league baseball. Still don't know why the Gazette hired it, but Michael Farber had a lot to do with it. So I show up. The first game I'm doing is at Olympic Stadium. It's the Cardinals and the Expos. And Rick Hummel, who is the Hall of Fame baseball writer with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, who also passed away recently. Mike Farber, who was at the Montreal Gazette, said, look, here's the first thing you do when you go to the ballpark, introduce yourself to Rick. He'll take care of you. Yeah, yeah, okay, fine. So I do that. And Rick was very nice, and he said, are you going to come down? And, the visiting manager session is now. And I said, I don't know. I should probably go to the Expos clubhouse first. He said, no, just come down and say hi to Whitey. And I said, okay, fine. So I go down. Rick introduces me to Whitey Herzog. It's his first game. He's, he hasn't covered baseball before. Whitey said, oh, you probably don't know much, so why don't you come back tomorrow and I'll give you as much time as you want. Fine. And basically what he's saying is now.
Yeah, I ain't got time for you.
I got time for you right now. I'm dealing with the real writers. And okay, fine. So I leave. And Hummel says to me, no, he's serious about that. Come back early tomorrow. Before Hummel leaves the ballpark then, I just said, make sure you go down and see Whitey. And I go, yeah, 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 I'll go down. So I do. I show up early. And he's in the office. And I come in, and without a word of a lie, for 90 minutes, he said, ask me anything about baseball. And there was no judgment. Like, explain the whole lefty-righty thing to me. Explain how you set a lineup. Mm. Explain your style of baseball.
Not a dumb question is what he said to you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not going to ask that in a group. He was so good. Jack Buck, who was the announcer, came down and sat in, and he started chiming in. And I've never, ever forgotten that. And then in later years, hopefully I'm not telling tales out of school here, but I spent one night at the dog track in Tampa with Whitey and Rick Hummel and Bob Hertzel. And I'd never bet before in my life.
Yeah.
Went to the dog track, had dinner. I mean, it was just, and a lot of people, sort of who were my age at that time will tell you the same stories about Whitey, just how he was kind of, you could ask him whatever you wanted, and he was a curmudgeon. Like, he had an edge to him.
Yep.
And it's just, for a lot of us, 80s baseball was Whitey, right?
Yeah.
The Cardinals and the Royals. So I was thinking about him today, and I probably should have taken better notes when he was explaining stuff to me. But everybody runs in. I think everybody needs somebody like that.
Absolutely.
When you start out. Somebody who just tells you, it's okay to be stupid in front of me.
Yeah.
Because
don't look down on you.
I've been in the game for 50 years.
Yeah.
And
Marquise Grissom was that guy for me when I first started in big leagues.
And it's
I sat on the plane, like I had no idea. He showed me.
Yeah, it's
like
people have because there was so much to learn back then about the ways, and mm-hmm. there were things you didn't do. Absolutely. As a player.
Absolutely.
There were things you didn't do as a writer.
Yeah.
Because back then, we were traveling on the charters with the players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had a, I had a certain seat when I got on the Expos charter.
Everybody did.
Right? Yeah. I had to sit next here. I sure as hell wasn't going to sit in the seat behind me.
No.
Because Spike Owen had the seat behind me. And there had to be at least one seat between the reporters and the players. And Spike Owen always had the window seat back.
Yeah.
This sounds really stupid, but it's true. You had to learn. And I just remember Whitey telling me about, you know, he gave me the line about, hey, anytime somebody tells you they went with their gut, the only reason they're telling you that is because they don't think you have enough balls to question their gut. Anyhow, that's it for us. Enjoy the baseball tonight. We'll be doing Blue Jays talk later. Have yourself a great day.